Okay, so let's get going. So here is then the full set of Maxwell's equations as we reach last lecture. Last lecture I left. I left with, can I have quiet, I said? Can I? Okay. I forgot what I was saying. Last lecture I left the final form of equations with the rho and j labeled as rho sub f and j sub f, standing for free charge carriers. The portion that is associated with the bound charge carriers were lumped into the other portions of the equations. D and H absorb the effects coming because of the presence of bound charge carriers, just maintaining a charge density as well as generating currents. This is the form that we'll be working with, okay? After that entire procedure, D is no longer epsilon naught times E. It is epsilon times E. And if you ask what that is, epsilon E stands for epsilon naught E plus P. Or perhaps it stands for epsilon naught times the relative permittivity times E, okay? So this is the form that we're going to be working with. And likewise, and B and H are no longer related to mu zero necessarily, they are related to mu, okay? And we talked about a little bit about mu last lecture, and we didn't provide any physical first principle models for it, but I said it can be determined experimentally, or you ask your physicists or material scientist friends. And how do you do it experimentally? Well, take your material whose mu you are wondering about, put it into the core of a solenoid and do an RL circle. Make some time constant measurements, see how fast exponential decay is taking in an RL circuit, and compare that time constant with the time constant when the solenoid is air-filled. From that difference, you can figure out what mu is. Okay, and this is the gist of your first homework problem that is due Tuesday. I put down the next homework problem for which you are responsible in exam number 2, and I just now summarized you that problem. So, we had mu's and epsilons telling us about the material world. And we haven't really discussed the most general thing, okay? Mu and epsilon just appeared as numbers. Perhaps you are also aware that they are frequency responses. They may depend on frequency. But that's all. In reality, in materials that are esoteric and maybe not so esoteric, these cannot be captured by numbers or scalar functions. Maybe they have multiple components. Maybe they are represented by tensors. There are certain materials in which when you apply an electric field D vector, the D vector that results is not parallel to E. If D is not parallel to E, it is not just a stretching, so you don't just have a scalar, but you have a matrix that is rotating that vector out of it. So in the most general case, matrices are used to represent, or tensors as we call, to represent epsilons and mu's. But if you are in such media, you are working in anisotropic media. Not all media are anisotropic. A lot of media we work with is isotropic. So we're going to stick with isotropic media. And only in higher order EM courses you would treat the case of anisotropic media. Maybe a little bit of it in 350, but not much more. Okay? So this is the realm with which we are going to examine electromagnetic effects now. Any questions? Now, in these equations, now rho and j, standing for the free charge density and the free charge current density, are still considered to be sources in some sense. If they didn't exist, you could fulfill the remaining equations with all zero values. E's, H, what else? B and D all equal to zero will satisfy this equation. But the amazing thing is, even if rho and j is equal to zero, there are other solutions of these equations which are non-zero. There are non-trivial solutions, and they are relevant, for instance, if you are in vacuum, if you are some distance in between stars, you are pretty much in vacuum. There is no local rho or j. yet the region will be full of solutions of this equation with non-zero electric fields. And what is that? That is just electromagnetic waves, lights, etc., passing by. Where are they coming from? They are coming from regions where there are rho's and j's. Okay, so rho's and j's ultimately are going to be the sources of what we call radiation. Okay? By studying this full set with the rho and j intact, you do a study of radiation process. We are not going to do that too much in this class. Radiation process is studied in detail in the first several weeks of ECB 350. And in practice, that also lends itself to a study of transmitting antennas. Okay, the rest of 350 then takes the waves and the fields through various types of guided and unguided and dispersive media, and eventually finishes with a study of how those waves are captured by antennas once again. Those topics will not be covered here. We will study more, just simply the propagation of waves in between their sources. Okay? For that purpose, let me suggest that now we set J equal to 0 and rho equal 0 and look at these equations to see what are the properties of interesting solutions of that set of equations, seemingly with zero drivers. Seemingly with zero drivers, but not exactly zero drivers. Okay? For instance, the electric field is fully described if you know its curl and divergence through whose theorem?
Helmholtz
theorem. Even with rho equal to zero, I have a divergence of D, or divergence of E, it's the same thing, and curl of E, and curl of E is not necessarily equal to zero. There is a driver. What is that driver? Minus dB dt, right. Okay, and likewise, okay? So that gives the sort of like the real reason why fields and waves can exist away from their sources, okay? You can say that it's no big deal. Even if I have a single charge, that single charge fills the entire universe with a field, okay? But that field drops very fast. It will drop as 1 over r squared. And we're going to find fields that are, not in this class necessarily, but by the time you see the continuation is in 350, you can see that radiating system will generate radiated fields that are not dropping as 1 over r squared, but as 1 over r. And that is a big, big difference in being able to communicate your signal from wherever you are producing it to your faraway destination, your friend somewhere holding the telephone, okay? So that communication is enabled by radiation solution of these equations. Now, we will not look at the radiation process, but we'll look at how the radiated fields propagate, okay? So with that, I set rho equal to zero, j equal to zero, and get all sorts of wave solutions at different frequencies, and depending on which frequencies that these solutions are, we refer to these solutions of Maxwell's equation, either radio wave or microwave or infrared or light, or even at higher frequencies, ultraviolet, x-rays, and so forth. We are interested in now getting the simplest solution where rho and j is equal to zero, and we're going to call such places as source-free. So I'm considering initially no reason why there should be electromagnetic waves in the region where I'm looking at, except for coming from outside the region I'm looking at. Okay, there are antennas, natural or man-made, outside the region of interest. Those are generating fields that penetrate my region. I am interested in this penetration and propagation issue. Okay, so then let's just move on like this. I set rho equal to zero. I said j is equal to 0, and write my entire set of equations now in terms of h and e. Okay, so b is turned into an h, and it's a trivial set. I want to deal with this set of equations. And they are both now, in this source-free region, both of these fields are divergent-free. They are curly. What gives them life is that they are curly. These are curly fields. And but I have too much stuff here, so let me eliminate h in favor of E, and to do that, I'm going to operate in this equation, with this equation. Suppose I take the curl of this equation, then I have to also take the curl of this side, and I can exchange the order of time derivative and curl. I will have ddt of curl of H, but I know what that is. That is equal to epsilon times E times the derivative of E. I'll make that substitution. So that's the way wave equation is derived, and this is exactly what Maxwell did as soon as he put his equations down. Now, as I need the curl of E in this process, I need to use one of these vector identities. All right, I think you looked at it at some homework problem. this is the gradient of divergence of E minus the Laplacian of E. But we know that divergence of E in this situation is equal to zero. So that disappears. So our equation simply then is reduced. The curl of E is equal to minus Laplacian. And therefore, that entire combination that I suggested becomes rather easy to deal with. Okay? It is this equation. Laplacian of E is equal to mu epsilon second derivative of E with respect to D. So just to make it clear on your in your mind, we started with curl of E is equal to minus dB dt, which is minus dH dt. D equals mu h, therefore I make that substitution. Okay? Then I go curl of E, in which I neglect this term, but retain this term. On the other side, I have minus mu, and then I go and I have curl of ddt of curl of h, so therefore I have ddt. Curl of h by Ampere's law is equal to j plus ddt, but j is gone because we are not dealing with source media. So this is going to be then curl of h is that's going to be ddt of displacement d, and displacement d is equal to, somebody help me, epsilon times E. So let me pull that epsilon right here, and then I have E, and there we go, we have an equation. Del square E, these two minus sign, I can forget about them. That implies exactly the equation that we are seeing here. Any questions? Okay, so this mu epsilon product is going to be, if we were in free space, it would be mu naught epsilon naught, and that would be 1 over C squared. Okay, so remember this. Mu naught times epsilon naught is 1 over C squared, or C is square root of mu naught epsilon naught inverted. Okay? In material media, instead of mu naught epsilon naught, we use mu and epsilon. So my notes in this section are written in terms of mu's and epsilons, but now I will lecture pretty much in terms of mu naughts and epsilon naughts. And after this lecture, my notes goes mu naught epsilon naught anyways, and you see, assuming that we are propagating in free space, but all these results that we get is applicable if we are not propagating in free space. You just substitute mu and mu naught and epsilon naught by mu and epsilon, and you're good. Okay? So with that understanding, I want to continue dealing with this equation. Okay, so basically, I'm going to write this equation in a slightly different form. And let's keep the blackboard and the screen intact. So I erase this. So I can write that particular equation as something like this. Del squared E minus 1 over C squared D squared E dt squared equal to 0. This is the wave equation. This is the equation that was written on the back of my t-shirt at the beginning of the semester. All right? You guys cannot see the blackboard again from the back. Maybe I do this. Maybe I do this, and it helps with it. Any questions? All right, so now let's continue a little bit further with the written notes. I expand that equation. What is the Laplacian? Laplacian is del dot del. Del dot del is the operator of, you know, second derivative with respect to x, second derivative, but the dot products make that makes you add those things. Okay, so therefore you apply this entire summation. The partial second partial with respect to all three coordinates summed up applied into this vector. That vector has itself three components, and you apply that operator to each of those components. That's the differential equation. This is a 3D vector wave equation. Okay? We want to find solutions of this other than zero. We know that zero will satisfy this equation, but we are interested in more interesting solutions which are other than zero. Of course, we could have started this whole story the other way around. We could have started with Ampere's law, which is curl of H is equal to ddt of epsilon times E, taken the curl of that, and then substituted Faraday's law into that equation, we would have ended up with a wave equation, 3D wave equation for H rather than E, and that would have been an identical equation. Okay? Therefore, whatever is the solution of this equation, its dependence on Z and T is going to be mimicked by the H. So E and H are going to be together, side by side. There will be a pair, but there's going to be a relationship between them, okay? And we're going to find that they're going to point not in the same direction, but perpendicular to one another. But their time variation and their spatial variations are going to be similar, and they will be moving, changing their positions, or propagating with the same speed, as we will see. Okay? For the moment, let us focus on this equation. I'm not at this point seeking a general solution of this equation. I will be satisfied to find one solution that is non-zero, other than zero. Okay, so we already know that there is a zero solution. I'm interested in finding a single solution that is other than zero, and from there on I can generalize. From there on I can generalize because I can use superposition. You can convince yourself quite easily that this is a linear equation. Therefore, if it has multiple solutions, weighted sum of those multiple solutions is also a solution. So there is a way of making more general solutions out of this if you have some particular solutions that you identify. All right, so I'm going to go after the following solution. Let's say that I'm interested in all those solutions of the vector field E, satisfying that equation, that has a particular direction to point at and a particular variation in space, okay? I am simplifying my solution that I'm seeking. I'll call it an X-polarized field because it's going to be pointing in X direction. Whatever I call my X direction in my three-dimensional right-handed coordinate system, I will choose electric field pointing in that direction. But there will be an orthogonal Z direction, and all the spatial variation is also in that direction. Plus, there is time derivative. Time variation. So I'm looking, therefore, to a scalar function E sub x that depends on the two variables, spatial coordinate z and time variable t. With that, of course, with that assumption, my heavy-looking differential equation with many, many components simplifies from the top equation to the bottom equation. Okay? First of all, I don't have to deal with E sub y and E sub z. I'm assuming them to be zero. Okay, my electric field is pointing only in x direction. Therefore, that 3D vector equation, vector wave equation, loses its vector character. I only care now about its scalar component along the x direction. Okay? But also, it loses two of the derivatives. Having no y dependence on z dependence, gets rid of the second and the third terms on the Laplacian expansion, giving us a one-dimensional wave equation that just looks like this here now. Okay? That's sort of a reduced version of this. I'm going to rewrite that as d squared e sub x dz squared minus 1 over c squared d squared e dt squared. And these are scalary, e sub x is equal to 0. So this is the equation that I need to solve. Any questions? Okay, so now I'm going to sort of like get rid of the notes for a moment. And also deviate my narrative a little bit what is given in the notes. So you can go back and read the notes. I immediately sort of declare that there are sine and cosine solutions of this equation, similar to the homework problem number 4 that you are finishing today. Okay, and carry on the argument along those lines. And I will carry a complementary sort of a discussion here where I will not immediately specialize to sine and cosine solutions. There are more general solutions. These are called D'Alembert solutions. I'm going to go in that direction. But they are both equivalents. All right, so let's solve this equation after fiddling with it a little bit, okay? There is an operator here acting on an unknown function e sub x. That operator can be rearranged in slightly different form as well. And I'm sure you have seen this sort of thing in some of your math courses. So let me try to factor out this operator and come get to some solution that can be reasonably easily seen, okay? And I'm going to write d dz minus 1 over c d dt as an operator acting on something else. And the something else is what remains here is dex ddz plus 1 over c dex dt still equal to 0. So this equation is consistent and the same as this equation. So if we were to apply this ddz on this term, we would recover our first term here. Okay? If we were to operate ddz on this term, that would be something that would be canceled when this guy is acting on this guy. So that would disappear. And finally, when I were to operate this on this last term, I would recover my last term. So this equation is exactly the same as the first one that I started with. And in fact, I could have put a plus sign here instead of minus, but change this into minus, that still would have been the same thing. Okay? So now, this is a good way of attacking this problem, because if I set this guy to be equal to 0, and find us E sub x that satisfies this to be true, obviously the full equation is also going to be satisfied. Okay? And alternatively, there will be another solution in which the roles of pluses and minuses are changed. I will solve another problem in which instead of with a plus sign here, I have a minus sign. I will solve that problem too. I will have two solutions that are going to be coming, and then I can superpose them. One of these solutions is going to be waves that are propagating in plus z direction. The other is going to be those propagating in minus z direction. Okay. So this is what more or less this French mathematician D'Alembert did in solving this equation. We call these types of solutions D'Alembert solutions. So let me give you the D'Alembert solution. To solve this, I propose that my E sub x can be any function, any differentiable function, such as sine, cosine, even ramp function, triangle function, unit step function, delta function, if you expand your differentiability condition, relax it so that you can deal with distributions, or bell shape, whatever. That's my f of t. Except that f of t is only a function of time. I'm seeking a solution that depends on time and space, on t and c simultaneously. And D'Alembert said, hey, this equation can be easily solved if you consider any function, and then you consider a time minus a delay, and the delay is going to be z divided by c. Okay? So now we can confirm this quickly and then associate this particular D'Alembert solution with waves propagating in plus z direction. With a minus sign in the argument, you have waves propagating in plus z direction, and with a plus sign in the argument, you have waves that are propagating in minus z direction, and both are possibilities allowed by Maxwell's equations in this region where there are no sources. Okay? So consider this to be this argument of f, let's call it u, okay? And then let's test this equation, okay? So this d dc of e sub x is evidently, by chain rule, df du times du dc. What is du dc? John.
So what is du dc?
Yeah. So basically, I have my function of time and space. That time and space combo, I give a name u. Okay? That's legit, right?
Yeah.
You can call it t minus dc is u. So then, it seeking this partial time derivative of e sub x, obeying this formula, I have to use chain rule. This is something you remember from calculus. I go df du, and then I have to go du dz. And what is du dz? You have to look at the definition of u. U was defined here. U is equal t minus z over c, therefore what is du dz?
Minus 1 over c.
Exactly. So I multiply this with minus 1 over c. But that's my first term. Let's look at this next term. John, why don't you help me? What is dex dt? In the same jump, in the same way.
It's a dex dt. So the
df du?
Df du.
Times?
Du dt.
And what is du dt? 1. Okay, so that's good enough. So all I need here, because I don't have to write multiplier 1, df du. Okay, so I think we are done, right? Because this term with a minus sign, 1 over c, this term, df du, is also being multiplied with 1 over c. 1 is positive, 1 is negative, they cancel one another. Good, we are done. So D'Alembert is right. So that is a solution. You take any function under the sun, for instance, f of t could be cosine omega t, where omega we're going to refer to as a radian frequency, just like in ECE 210. And then our E sub x of zt could be this function, except that you take this t and replace it with Akash. You can rewrite this, except that you replace this t by the recipe, D'Alembert's recipe. You take any function of time, and you replace t with a delayed time, t minus dc, it becomes a Maxwell's wave equation solution. So we can then set this, t minus z over c. Okay, z over c is of course a time delay, yeah? It is the time that you cover the distance z traveling at speed c, all right? So this is a time delay. All right, so this is just an example. But let me continue with this example. we typically expand this solution, this type of a solution, as follows. We say omega times t, we write it explicitly. Then we have omega z divided by c, and we typically, and there is a minus sign in front of it, we typically then consider omega divided by c to be a new parameter that we call beta, and we write it like this. Okay? So then beta, I'm now giving a definition, is omega divided by c. And while this is called wave frequency, this is called wave number. Okay? Think of wave number as a frequency, but not in time, but in space. Because a cosine function, whether you plot it as a function of time or you plot it as a function of space, it is going to just oscillate like a cosine. It will have its repetitions and all that. So there is a spatial frequency. Beta is that spatial frequency in the radian sense. Is that making sense? Okay, so that's where we are. Okay, so let me finish this discussion. Suppose that I factored out my equation originally the other way around. I put a plus sign here, then I put a minus sign there. You can easily convince yourself that in that case, satisfying this equation with the plus sign would have required you to have a plus sign instead of minus sign in between, and you would have had this. Okay? And now we have two possible solutions of D'Alembert type. Okay? One is for waves that are propagating in plus z direction, the other is for those propagating in minus z direction. When you plot these functions, you examine them, you quickly conclude that minus sign corresponds to the waves that are propagating in plus z direction and plus the other. Any questions? So let's mark that. Propagating in plus z direction, and with the plus sign here, propagating in minus z direction. Any questions? All right, so then let's move on. Suppose, as another example, I consider my f of t function to be the rectangle function familiar from ECE 210, unit rectangle. What was this function? Graphically, it's this function. It is 0 everywhere except between minus 1.5 and 1.5 along the t-axis, and it becomes a unit step with a value of 1. This is the rectangle function. So if our f of t is a rectangle function, then there is going to be a rectangular wave that will be propagating. Okay? And let's generalize this a little bit. So my second example is f of t is not rectangle function, but it's rectangle function of t minus t divided by tau. And most of you will remember this to be a rectangle function that has a total width of tau along the t-axis, right? And the picture for that would be now minus tau over 2, tau over 2. And we might consider 1 microsecond tau to be an important sort of a tau for us, because when we do send communicate, we communicate a lot of bits and so forth. We will use small pulse lengths, microseconds, or even nanoseconds at some point, ultimately. Okay? And of course, now this type of a duration of 1 microsecond is going to correspond to some spatial extent, as we will see in just a few moments. Any questions here? So if this is our f of t, then the corresponding ex of zt is going to be rectangle of, what is it, Akash, t? I'm turning now f of t, which is my source function, into a traveling wave that is satisfying the wave equation, the way D'Alembert identified. So what is it? What do I need to say? If my waveform is a rectangle function in time, my entire function is f of the rectangle of t, somebody else, minus zt, minus z over c, all divided by tau. Okay? So now, this is an equation that you can plot, if you wish, as a function of time at any given z, or you can plot it at any given t as a function of z, and it's all going to be meaningful in that sense. Okay? But furthermore, What can you say about where the center of this pulse is going to be at different times?
Z over C.
Why is that?
Because that's where this function is.
Exactly. You remember that the rectangle function is always going to be centered around whatever makes its argument equal to
zero.
So if you make the argument equal to zero and solve for t, okay, it's going to give you z over c. Or if you can solve, if you convert it into z, it's going to be giving you c times
t.
Okay, so then as time is progressing, where is this pulse going? As a function of t, its center is always at z times c. Okay? And positive, so because c is a positive quantity. With a minus sign, we have seen this wave starting at t equals 0 to be centered around z equals 0 and moving forward on. Any questions here? This guy is making faces. Okay, so you're okay. Okay, so of course, if we had gone with the other direction, with a plus sign here, the other D'Alembert solution, instead of moving in the plus z direction, the equation would say it's moving in minus z direction. You would have progressively more and more negative values of z as time progresses, because then t plus z over c would be set to equal to zero, and when you solve that for z, you would have minus ct. Okay, so please then burn this idea in your mind, in your brain. The minus sign goes with plus propagation and plus sign goes with minus propagation. Whether you are doing it with D'Alembert solutions or alternatively you are doing it more in terms of sines and cosines, which are of course nothing other than special cases of D'Alembert solutions. But sines and cosines are important, right? They are very important cases. Why is that? Because if you have a lot of sines and cosines with different omegas, okay, different frequencies will of course now correspond to different betas as well. Okay, you will have all these different solutions. They are all cosinusoidal and all satisfying the wave equation. They either move rapidly if their frequency is high, and in which case they have large beta, and large beta means that they are also changing fast in space. Their wavelength is small. We are going to see that beta and wavelength are related to one another. What is the, how is the period related to omega? Pardon? 2 pi over omega. T is 2 pi over omega. This must have been burned into your brain. You just spit it out from 210, right? Or from a few other things. So by analogy, what would be the wavelength in terms of beta? Just apply the same? Exactly. Wavelength is 2 pi over beta. If you don't believe this, okay, go and, what's your name? Who answered me?
Jihan.
Plot this function as a function of z at a fixed time. Say t is equal to 0, plot it as a function of z. You're going to get a cosine, okay? Measure the distance between two successive peaks, and you're going to see that it's going to exactly match 2 pi over beta, whatever beta you use, okay? So we might as well write this down. Summary. Okay, yeah, period of a wave, cosinusoidal wave, is simply 2 pi over its radian frequency. But of course, radian frequency omega is 2 pi times f. Then 2 pi is canceled. You can say t is also 1 over f. Okay, so this is important to remember. Likewise, a wavelength is equal to 2 pi over beta. And one more fact. If beta is equal to omega over c, then you can combine those two equations and reach the following conclusions. Lambda times f is equal to c. But this is only true if you are propagating in free space and the propagation speed is c. On the other hand, this equation is still valid if you replace c with whatever is the corresponding propagation speed. Perhaps the medium has some funny mu and epsilon rather than mu naught and epsilon. Then instead of using 1 over square root of mu epsilon indicating c, simply use 1 over square root of mu epsilon without the knots, and that is still true. Okay? So, concept of wavelength, wave number, wave frequency, wave period are going to become important as we consider applications of these waves in propagating information and whatnot. Stuff like that. Any questions? Okay. Do I need another example? Let's do another example. Oh, I will. Before another example, I need to do something different. So far, we have only solved the wave equation for the electric field. But what about H, B, etc.? We should also pay attention to that. Also, this is a. I said something about polarization. My solution is a x-polarized wave, but it is propagating in the z-direction. So there is an interesting relationship there. The vector E is pointing perpendicular to the propagation direction. Propagation direction is either plus or minus z. We are orthogonal. These are transverse waves. Of course, you remember this perhaps from your physics courses, but we got a transverse solution. Not only E is transverse to propagation direction, but H is also transverse to propagation direction. And not only H is transverse to propagation direction, H, we're going to find, is transverse to the electric field too. So that the E and H and the propagation direction make a mutually orthogonal set of vectors. They are all perpendicular to one another. Moreover, it is always the case that E cross H points in the direction of propagation. So ultimately, when you get your science messed up because you are careless, at the end you fix your problem by going and checking whether E cross H is pointing in the direction of propagation. And when it is not, you say, I made a mistake. Let me go and find out where I made my mistake. Okay? So yet another right-hand rule. Right? How many do we have so far? I've lost count. Okay. All right, so if we have our D'Alembert solution for E sub X, let's sort of like use this in the next step. So now that I know what E sub X looks like, it's either one of these guys, either plus propagating or minus propagating D'Alembert wave. I wonder what is the corresponding H field or B field. Let's go for the B field first. I'm going to get the B field by taking the curl of E and not knowing that it is equal to minus dB dt. Okay? Let's solve this. This is sort of like maybe similar to one of the homework problems you are doing today. The last two problems were of this type. So I'm helping out. So what is this curl of E in this particular case? Well, like all curls, I have to go like this. Some determinant. And I have only E sub X. E sub Y and E sub Z are equal to 0. So I put my E sub X here, 0, 0, and take this curl. Okay? Now, there is no X component because this doesn't give me anything. There is a Y component. Y component is going to come fine. And there is no Z component. This is 0. This is also 0 because there is no Y dependence of E sub X. Therefore, this curl gives me only a Y component result. Okay? And let's find out what that is a little bit more carefully. Ordinarily, I would start with a negative y, then go like this, minus like this. This is dead, but this is alive, but that is coming with a minus sign. Two minus signs got rid of one another. I have y hat dex dz. Okay? So evidently, the curl on this side is a vector that points in y direction. What does that mean regarding b? It is also pointing in y direction. Okay? So given that, let me erase this stuff. Then I can write that result without any of the vector complexities as follows. dEx dz is equal to negative dBy dt. Do you guys agree? That B must have only Y component, so why bother with anything else? Drop out the unit vector Y, dBy dt. Okay? So now, what is dEx dz? John, help me. Here's my dEx, and let's get dEx dz.
I have a question. Are we using the negative sign?
Okay, let's use the negative sign.
And so it would be negative 1 over c?
It's going to be dFdu times?
Negative 1 over c.
Negative 1 over c. I think that's it, right? Okay, so now we consider this to match this. We can forget about the minus signs because they are there both, they cancel out. Okay, so but I guess that I have to erase this because otherwise I'm inconsistent. And now I have to propose a certain y that matches this, and a certain b sub y that matches this. Akash, can you suggest what that may be? Based on this being equal to this, what is your suggestion that we select for b sub y? So let me help you out. I suggest that b sub y should be 1 over c times f of u, where u is c minus z over c. Do you agree, Akash? Tell us why you agree.
Because if you get the same answer.
Because if I take the ddt of this, I get the same answer. Okay, so now, what did we find out? We have an x-directed electric field coming along with an accompanied y-directed magnetic field. To get the magnetic field, and this is, of course, Ex. So all we need to do is take Ex, divide it by C, and consider this to be a 90-degree rotated solution that accompanies E. Okay, so we don't memorize a formula, but sort of learn and remember the process. If you are given E, just simply divide that E by C and rotate it by 90 degrees. In which direction do you rotate it by 90 degrees? We will confirm right now the right direction to rotate it so that the right-hand rule is obeyed. Okay, let us now draw a little picture. This is X, this is Y, this is Z. My electric field was pointing in the direction X, and after this work, I am concluding that the accompanying B is pointing in Y, okay? So it's like this. In fact, all I need to do is take the magnitude of this, divide by C, and rotate it in this direction. And then, this is all for a wave, because John wanted so, that has a minus sign, which means that it is propagating in plus Z direction, so that the propagation direction is this, okay? I'm just putting a wiggle line to remind you in which direction the propagation is taking place. And this is right-handed. I can see that. When I go E cross B, my thumb is pointing in the direction of the propagation. Okay? So then, for waves that are propagating in minus Z direction, what would I have chosen? John? I would have chosen this, because then I go like this. Okay? Without doing that math. Which we can do, of course, but that's yet one other set of algebraic stuff that you want to avoid. If you trust the right-hand rule, works in both cases. And of course it should. The situation is totally symmetric in the sense that it was arbitrary why I called one direction the other x and not minus x. So in that sense, there is a symmetry in this situation. We are going to be sort of guided by the right-hand rule in that sense. So always take your whatever your electric field vector is, divide it by C. It is not yet B because you have to do one more act of rotation. You rotate it such that right-hand rule is obeyed, which means that E cross B should be propagated, should be pointing your thumb in the direction of propagation. Conversely, if you know B, you turn it into E by multiplying it B with C and again doing a rotation so that ultimately E cross B is again propagating, propagating, or E cross B vector is pointing in the direction of the propagation. Okay, don't memorize any equations, but learn this. And remember this forever. It's an easy thing to remember. Any questions? Yeah?
The B equals to half T over C minus C over C satisfied that.
Pardon? Say again.
B, Y equals to half T over C minus C over C satisfied your equation.
It does, because that's what we proved.
F T over C minus C over C. That equation seems also satisfied.
Say again, f of t
over c minus c over c.
Z over c or minus what?
T over c minus z over c.
T over c
minus z over c.
Minus z over c? Like this?
Yeah, does it satisfy your
equation? Why do you put this equation? This is dimensionally inconsistent. I don't understand why you're going.
Because it's
different. Oh, yeah. You are saying tau. This, like this. Is that the question?
No, if you do the differentiate this equation, it satisfies yours. the previous one, the f, u.
If you differentiate this one, it would bring out a 1 over c term, and it would violate the equation, right? The original equation. Then you would have a du dt, you would have the f du and the u dt, and your du dt would bring another 1 over c factor, and it would violate the equation that we started with. Yes? How about he's not saying yes? Okay, I'm confused by your question, but I think you have a confused question, that's why. Why don't we settle this after the class, okay? Important thing here is, I'm done with math, okay? You go and do your more math, I don't care. You are a smart kid, I know, you can do your math. I know my answer is right, okay? So confirm my answer, the answer is this. You take your E, you divide it by C, and you rotate it by 90 degrees. Into which direction? Into that direction, such that E cross B is going to point in the direction of propagation. Conversely, if you have your B, which is also a D'Alembert solution, to get the corresponding E, multiply your B with C, and then rotate it by 90 degrees. Into which direction? To that direction, says E cross B pointing to propagation direction. Okay, Lee? This is the answer, okay? And math always follows. Okay, but now I was going to say something important, and I forgot because of this discussion. And what was that? What else were we talking about? It's one second.
E cross H.
Yeah, E cross H. Yeah, right. Thank you. Eventually, we want H, okay, not B, okay. For various reasons, for pointing theorem, E cross H. Pointing flux is E cross H, not E cross B. Thank you. First, let me point out to you the obvious fact: if B sub Y is E sub X divided C. And I'm going to now put plus or minus, okay? I put plus or minus. One of them is for plus propagation, the other is for minus propagation. The top one is for plus propagation, the other one is minus. It is obvious, but maybe you are missing. C is a huge number. Therefore, B is tiny compared to E. Okay? That's my first statement. Then maybe somebody smart like Lee is going to say, what do you mean by that? It depends on your units, etc. I can imagine some set of units in which C is even 1, okay? Because physicists have that sort of thing, in which E and B would have the same magnitudes. And I would say, hey, you are right. But then, if you are measuring C in units, that makes it 1. Most other velocities that matter, like you and I walking around, would be not 1. It would be an incredibly small number. So C is always a big number to other velocities that are around. In that sense, the fact that B is E divided by C is profound. And its most profound aspect comes in, guess which equation? Lorentz force law. Remember, this is where force Q E plus B cross B comes in. Where is this B? That is the velocity of the charge carrier in the lap frame. Okay? That can be a small velocity. Sometimes it can be big velocity. Usually it's small velocity. To make it big velocity, you have to put zillions of dollars, like in CERN or Fermilab. By the way, we should all be celebrating because of the Higgs boson, etc. That was an important thing. But in order to have your V to be comparable to C, you have to put a ton of money into this business, okay? So now we know that this V here, except for its direction, is nothing but E divided by C. Therefore, the second term in this equation is E-like multiplied with the ratio of B to C, and that is going to be tiny, unless you are in Fermilab. Okay, in most situations, the Bs that accompanies E is having a very minor effect in the electrodynamics. I'm not saying it's zero, I'm not saying neglect it, but there are certain situations that we will actually choose to neglect that term. Okay. All right. But then we have, finally, we have to answer your question. What was your name? You're not Lee.
Mingyu.
You?
Mingyu.
Mingyu.
Yeah.
Mingyu's question. He said, what about H? Well, let's, if we know B, we can turn it into H. That's no big deal. Because B is equal to mu H, or in free space, mu naught H. And if this guy is E, so let's work with magnitudes to make this simple, okay? If B magnitude is E magnitude divided by C magnitude, then H magnitude is equal to E magnitude divided by C times mu naught. Okay? Now, what is C? So let's continue with this. This is magnitude E, but C is 1 over square root of mu naught epsilon naught. Mu naught is sitting there. I'm getting the following result. E divided by square root of mu naught divided by epsilon naught. Okay? And I'm going to write this as E divided by eta. Eta is a new animal that is entering our zoo. It is going to be called intrinsic impedance because it is measured in ohms. And that is because it is an E to H ratio. E is measured in volts per meter. H is measured in amperes per meter. Therefore, E to H ratio is the same as ohms. Okay? So, for clarity then, I'm going to write eta is mu over epsilon in general. Eta naught is equal to mu naught over epsilon naught in free space. In free space, mu naught is 4 pi times 10 to the minus 7. And epsilon naught is 1 over 36 pi 10 to the 9. When you substitute all those guys into that, things simplify, and what do you get? Eta naught equals how many ohms? I'm now just testing your what you remember from physics 212. It becomes 125 ohms. Okay? So that is the ratio, that is the number that corresponds to the ratio of E and H. Okay? The ratio that matters for E and B is C. But for E and H, it is this guy, intrinsic impedance. Okay? So finally, I can also write, in addition to this, H sub Y is equal to plus or minus E sub X divided by eta naught in this problem. Okay? So what did we do? We did, I ran out of time. We looked at D'Alembert solutions of wave equations. We found that D'Alembert solutions are any functions whose time has been delayed by plus or minus z over c, even though Lee and I have something to fix, but that is doesn't matter. And E and H can be related to one another, and E and H are all, or both of them are orthogonal to one another and orthogonal to the propagation direction, and we know how to go back and forth, okay? Plus, we can sort of like have one example I was intending to do that I couldn't do, I will do at the beginning of next lecture. I want to have a funny looking pulse shape propagating in either direction and how they are generated by current sheets. That's what we're going to see. All right? So that material on Monday will be included in the exam because it is also included in the homework. Thank you.